Even people who have advantages in life, many advantages in life, and consider themselves relatively happy can fall into drug abuse. You probably hear that a lot, but now you'll hear it from someone who knows the story firsthand. Kyle Simpson was a Southern Oregon University student when he got hooked on painkillers, eventually turning to heroin. Kyle tells his story as a cautionary and educational tale, including in a documentary he produced on his addiction. He'll be part of a panel discussion called Junk, Opiates in Jackson County, tomorrow evening at the Meese Auditorium at the Art Building at Southern Oregon University. He and two other panelists join us. So here's Kyle. Welcome, Kyle Simpson. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Jeff.
And two other guests join us. Dr. Jim Shames is well-known to Jefferson Public Radio listeners. He is the Jackson County Medical Director and Health Officer. Jim, good to see you again.
Good to see you too, Jeff.
And Lee Ayers is with us as well. She's a criminology professor at Southern Oregon University, so took the long walk a building away to come see us. Good to see you again.
Thank you.
Kyle, let's start with you. You're from Southern California. You came to Ashland for college, is that right?
Correct, yeah.
Did you do drugs, recreational drugs in high school?
Yeah, totally. It's something that has definitely been a part of my life, you know, all throughout, even from an early age, definitely. And as I got older, it kind of became more and more serious and eventually reached a kind of a sinister point.
I watched the YouTube intro for the documentary you put out. How long is the documentary itself?
It's about 27 minutes.
Okay.
So it's pretty short.
All right. So you got about 10% of it out there online to look at.
Most definitely.
Your way of telling the story is fairly free and easy. Like, hey, I was a pretty happy kid. I always considered myself a happy person. So what do you suppose affected that progression? What got you into stuff that was not as easy to walk away from?
I think it's just the disease of addiction. You know, it really is not. The point I was trying to make with the documentary is that it, you know, it doesn't target certain groups of people. It doesn't know, you know, race or, you know, financial situation. It can really be an easy thing for lots of people to slip into. And I think that's a really important distinction to make.
Was there a moment when you realized that things had gotten out of control, that it wasn't a case of you just having some fun with the drugs, but the drugs were having you?
There was a lot of those, and they became progressively worse and worse, as is the case with a lot of people. But I would say the real moment was going to jail and being like, okay, this is, you know, this could be a future.
What was the charge? What did you go to jail for?
It was felony possession of heroin.
So heroin's used to be a big jump for people. I know Jim Shames will tell us that there are lots of people in your situation, but before you even got there, you freebased OxyContin. Did I hear that right?
Yeah, that's really how it started. Was, you know, I think for a lot of kids take pills, you know, take opiate pills because they're so overprescribed. That's something that, you know, I think Jim has more to weigh in on. But there, it's such a ubiquitous thing in this day and age for people to treat pain with opioid painkillers, and they just kind of slip down the ladder into the hands of kids. And from there, you know, they're really expensive, and it's, you know, it's a pretty hard drug. I would say it's just as intoxicating as heroin, but heroin is just so much cheaper. So really, by the time you're addicted to opiates, you know, things like OxyContin and Vicodin and fentanyl, it's really easy to just make the jump and be like, okay, well, this is a reality for me, and if I don't get this, I will be sick.
Was there any mental barrier for you in terms of, like, the stigma that attaches to heroin? Like, only
totally.
Junkies do heroin, really?
Yeah, totally. It's always, I think with a lot of people that do drugs, it's like, you know, I'm going to smoke weed, but I'm never going to do that. You know, I'm never going to do meth. That was one thing I always told myself, was I'm never going to do meth. And I never did do meth, but even with heroin, it was like, I don't know. I'm never going to do heroin. And then I started doing heroin. I'm never going to shoot up heroin. And then I started shooting up heroin. And it's just, it's really a cyclical thing.
How long did the heroin abuse go on?
It went on for years. It was off and on before I even came to Southern Oregon University. I had done it in high school. And, you know, it was kind of a casual thing. I thought of myself as a casual heroin user. You know, I was into Lou Reed and I was into John Coltrane and all these artists that it was kind of heroin-inspired music. So I thought, you know, maybe if I did heroin, I would be somehow, I don't know, enlightened artistically or something.
Did it give you any greater creativity?
No,
or anything?
No. Definitely not. Yeah.
And you have graduated, though, is that right?
I have, yeah.
You did finish college. Kyle Simpson is a former Southern Oregon University student and a former addict. He has made a documentary film about what happened to him. He'll be part of a panel discussion called Junk, Opiates in Jackson County. That's tomorrow, April 11th. At reception at 6:30 at the Meese Auditorium at the Southern Oregon University Art Building. The film screens at 7 o'clock. The panel includes Lee Ayers is a professor of criminology at Southern Oregon University, and Jim Shames, who's the Jackson County Medical Director. And Dr. Shames, I'd like to turn to you now and ask how common Kyle's story is.
You know, I was sitting here nodding my head, saying I've heard this story over and over and over again. One of my jobs is working in medication-assisted treatment with people who've lost control of opiates. I've done it for 25 years, and we currently have about 600 or 700 people in treatment. And I've sat across from folks like Kyle so many times. You know, they're talented young people who been playing around with various drugs, and they're taking chances, and you know, life's all in front of them, and they get hurt. Somebody gives them some pain pills, way too many pain pills. They like them. They can get them anywhere they want. They can milk the doctor for a while, and they just get way in over their heads on this drug. I mean, for millennia, we've known how powerful opiates were, and we've treated them with great respect. And over the last 20, 30 years, physicians have been misled into thinking that we should be using opiates much more freely, that pain, especially chronic pain, should be treated with opiates, and you know, kind of forgotten the basic lessons of how powerful this drug is and how it can grab you and hold you and make it really hard to let go. So I have, you know, tremendous respect for you and being able to get to the other side of that. And a lot of people can't, and a lot of people are still struggling.
You know, I guess I'm a bit of a drug rube. I was just hearing for the first time a few days ago about the kinds of things that Kyle got into with the, like, freebasing OxyContin. So is this just to get the rush in faster when you burn the drug and inhale it?
First of all opiates really end up in the same place in the brain. I mean, to think that Vicodin and heroin are like totally separate is misleading because really, you know, hydrocodone, oxycodone, fentanyl, they all go to the same place in the brain. And at some point, your tolerance is so high and the drugs are so expensive that heroin, you know, becomes quite attractive for all sorts of reasons, one of which just is the economy of it.
So is there any particular slice of society that is more affected than any other? It seems to go across a lot of demographic boundaries.
Well, if you developed your stereotypes about heroin from 40, 50 years ago, you might have this kind of image of inner city, disadvantaged African-American. The drug comes in from, you know, Colombian cartels into the East Coast cities. We have a whole different phenomenon now. And in fact, the people who are dying from opiate overdoses to the greatest extent are middle-aged, rural, white people. And in fact, the mortality curve, you can look at the mortality curve from around the world, and middle-aged people all over the world are living longer. It's amazing. Every single country where there's living longer, with one exception, and it's stark when you see it graphically presented, it's middle-aged white folks are actually dying with greater frequency now than they did 20 years ago. That's not to say that all sorts of folks from all walks of life aren't dying from opiate overdoses, but, you know, especially pills in that age group can be and are deadly.
Dr. Lee Ayers, let me turn to you as the criminologist on the panel here and get some perspective about how the criminal justice system has approached particularly the rapid rise in the opioid abuses and people caught with them, and then correspondingly the return, it seems like, of heroin to the streets.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting dilemma at this point in time, because we've seen this criminal element in the sense that we often think of the people who should be behind bars are the folks who are committing crimes person against person. And we look at the state of Oregon, early in 2010, we were truly a state that housed individuals that were more creating violent crimes against individuals versus the amount that we would see for nonviolent crime. When we look at our female population right now in particular, we see a lot of identity theft, we see a lot of drug abuse, and we see that this particular population has soared. And so in 2004, when we built the Coffee Creek facility, we saw a 60% increase in the female population, and now there's talk in, within the state that we need another female facility. So there's different approaches. We're certainly seeing that although we're seeing legalization and acceptance of some types of drugs across states, like we've seen with marijuana, there is still a hardcore approach where this is the line, do not cross it, and when you do, you're going to prison for a long period of time. And that can still happen when we look at the cycle of addiction. And then you ask yourself, is prison the best place for people who are addicted? And so what are we expecting from incarceration and what's going to happen long term? When we put into place 3194, we were hoping that there would be some form of aftercare. So when they come back into the community, is that when treatment will occur? It's not something where you can slap someone on the hand and say, okay, you're done. This is it. We're going to scare you straight. Very much so. They need the tools to be successful because, as Kyle mentioned, addiction is a brain disease. And when we look at the aspect and the altering of the brain that occurs from this chemical dependency, it becomes very important that we look at not immediate changes because it takes sometimes more than once in rehab to have it be successful. It can take multiple times and the right tools.
3194, is that an Oregon legislative bill?
Yeah.
To do what?
It was to put in a combination of treatment and incarceration. So we're not really happy with the fact that you're using drugs that are illegal, but we're also looking at the fact that down the road, you're going to need some tools to help you be successful. So we have our recovery court here, much like we have drug courts and specialized courts. It was a process that was going to give you something after serving time to transition back into the regular community and maybe be successful this time.
Is the incarceration somewhat reduced as part of that package?
In some ways, yes. Mm-hmm.
But not consistently?
Well, it depends. You know, unlike Measure 11, which everything is structured around certainty, mm-hmm. there is some flexibility with this. And depending on which county you're in, there can be some changes.
Is that judge discretion? Or?
You know, and sometimes it depends on if there's room. So when we look at prison, especially right now, and trying to keep our rates of incarceration where they are, sometimes you're waiting for a bed, much like you see with recovery. And so it just depends on how much room is upstate, how much room is local, and where they can place you. And I think that judges often like to look at what is the best opportunity for this type of offender. And I think there's a level of putting it together to make it work for the individual.
Lee Ayers, criminology professor at Southern Oregon University, Dr. Jim Shames, Jackson County's medical director and health officer, and Kyle Simpson, a former Southern Oregon University student. He is a graduate and a former addict as well. They'll all be part of the panel tomorrow night at 6:30 at the Mies Auditorium at the Southern Oregon University Art Building. The session is called Junk, Opiates in Jackson County. The film starts at 7 o'clock, half an hour after the reception. So, Kyle, I want to come back to you. What were the programs that helped you get back on the straight and narrow, and how available are those programs to everybody in society?
They're not available at all. And I think that's something that's really important to talk about and something that I wanted to talk about in making this film. I think Lee mentioned there's sort of a mutual relationship between jails and recovery houses in the sense that they're both totally full. However, it's so much easier to get a bed in a jail in this day and age than it is to get in a treatment facility. And I think that's fundamentally wrong. You know, we're incarcerating people who are addicted to drugs, and they, even if they want treatment, they can't get it.
Let me take a phone call here. I know you don't all have headphones, but I'll relay the question from Michael in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Yes, good morning. Great show. Interested in what are actual treatment options available in Jackson County, and how do they help?
Okay, actual.
Yeah.
Thank you, Michael. Appreciate that. So let's turn it to Jim Shames. What are the actual treatment options available in Jackson County, and how do they help?
Well, there's residential treatment. There's a ARC and OnTrack have residential programs. There's outpatient. This is all paid for through Medicaid and the CCOs, the Oregon Health Plan.
So, therefore, in some jeopardy, I would think, with issues with the...
They are. And I don't – I mean, we have resources, but they are totally underdeveloped, underfunded. And we have medication-assisted treatment, which in the case of opiate addiction can be quite valuable, either as a bridge or for some people as a long-term treatment.
So is that often a methadone treatment?
It would be methadone in a methadone clinic or buprenorphine, which is Suboxone and Subutex, which can be prescribed by healthcare providers who take a course and get, you know, special training, and that is becoming increasingly increasingly available in this community. I think that's this is a life-threatening disease. People die all the time of opiate overdoses. So we need to keep that in mind as we talk about treatment. We need to get folks safe and get them safe quickly, really in whatever modality is most appropriate for them.
So, but do they have to admit to somebody there's a problem first, right?
That's correct. Well, yes and no. There's evidence that folks who are dragged kicking and screaming to drug court or, you know, to some kind of treatment actually can do quite well as well. But in general, yes, folks do better.
So, Kyle, how willing were you? You mentioned that you did get arrested for possession of heroin. So I mean, was it an instant thing, or did it take a couple of times of events like that to get you finally to say, oh, this is it, I got to do something?
Yeah, it was totally not an instantaneous thing. You know, no matter how many people in my life were saying, Kyle, we're worried about you. Kyle, you're messing up. What are you doing? I was unable to see that. So even in going to jail and spending some time there, I didn't want to stop doing drugs. I didn't stop doing drugs. So only until I really took a hard look at where I was and got some clarity, you know, physically being dragged to treatment, kicking and screaming, I was able to get, you know, a couple of days off drugs and see, like, okay, this is where I'm at. This is reality, and this is not what I want to do. I was able to get better.
Lee Ayers, how political does this get? Because, you know, criminal justice is always a bit of a political football, even on the sunniest and happiest of days. But the fact is that you have a fair number of people, I notice, from several ends of the political spectrum talking about sentencing reform and mm-hmm. not being as harsh on people who did nonviolent drug crimes, for example. But it does seem like it also can change as quickly as new people getting elected into power.
That's very true. It's a slippery slope because you want to be tough on crime because we see that oftentimes will get folks elected. But at the same time, there's a real shift right now to become smart on crime. And when we think about the aspect of spending, you know, somewhere around $32,000 a year to incarcerate someone in the Department of Corrections in this state, how much do we put into this if it's not what's going to lead to the results we'd like to see from an individual? Texas has a model where they have substance abuse secure facilities where individuals spend 6 months up to 9, depending on the level of addiction, in what is like a prison, very much so, put together like a prison, except they're dormitory style. They're not so much individual cells. After that, step two is they reenter into the community. They're in safe houses or Oxford houses or transitioning houses like the Salvation Army rehabilitation programs. They spend another 90 days there. And then they go into the third step of the program, which is getting a job and becoming a productive citizen. All the while, at any time, if there's a mess up, they go straight to prison and not back to the substance abuse prison. They go to an actual facility. So in that sense, they're investing in normalizing the type of behavior they'd like to see. It's not a 12-step program that they do while they're in the substance abuse facility. What they're working on is criminogenic thinking errors and transitioning into letting the brain have a rest. You know, when you look at someone who's a needle-dependent drug addict, it's going to take a period of time before they can even get to a point where the cravings aren't going to be what drives their everyday activities. And so that becomes important too, is to give them a long enough time of clean time to start thinking about what they would actually like to do versus having 30, 45, sometimes 90 days, depending on if there's a co-occurring disorder in a facility where they don't have as much freedom of movement, and then coming out and re-immersing into regular day activities.
You mentioned in the state of Oregon, $32,000 a year to incarcerate a person. The system you mentioned in Texas, is there much lower per person cost for the less secure and yet more dormitory-like treatment?
I think they're thinking, do we pay now or do we pay later? And so we will look at the aspect of putting someone behind bars and the type of security that has to go into this. Certainly there has to be that aspect of saying how much will they cycle, how much will they churn, and can we break the recidivism rate? And in this situation, it's more than recidivating, it's also the relapse. And there's that aspect, too, of how many folks are we talking about? So when you look at the cost-benefit analysis of this program, if we start here, and not necessarily first offense, but if we start here and it breaks the cycle long-term, what does it save society by not putting them through the revolving door?
Jim Shames, we've been talking to you for years about what was called the Opioid Prescribers Group and now became Oregon Pain Guidance. How goes the effort to reduce the supply of addictive drugs on the streets?
Well, over the years, we've gotten a lot more support on the federal level and the state level. There's a lot of work being done in Oregon. I think really Oregon is taking the lead. There's an opioid overdose task force that's working around the state. Some of the work we've done here locally is being sort of exported to different regions in the state. We have a pain conference coming up May 4th, 5th, and 6th, which is going to bring people from around the country to talk about best practices for the treatment of pain. And the subtitle is, if not opioids, then what? Because we've really got to learn how to help people manage their pain without resorting to drugs that for many people can lose control of and end up in trouble like Kyle.
So, Kyle, let's get the last word here. What would you like to see happen? What must happen in your mind to get people to not get addicted like you were to opioids and opiates?
I think it's a multitude of things. I think opioids need to be prescribed smarter. I think there needs to not be so much availability to opioids. I think we need to begin to see addiction more like a disease than a moral failing. I think we need to not lock up addicts and, you know, start to really shift towards treatment. I think we need to be more empathetic.
Kyle Simpson, a graduate of Southern Oregon University, was addicted to prescription painkillers all the way up to heroin. Dr. Jim Shames is Jackson County's medical director and health officer. Lee Ayers, criminology professor at Southern Oregon University. They'll all be on a panel tomorrow, which includes looking at Kyle's film, his documentary of 27 minutes about his experience. This will all be starting at 6:30 tomorrow evening at the Meese Auditorium at the Southern Oregon University campus. The program again called Junk, Opiates in Jackson County. Kyle, Dr. Jim, and Dr. Lee, thank you all for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jeff.